What is up? Welcome to the People's Show. Bick Nizar, Randy Janda, and Jamie Dodd. And you as well. 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. The smart alternative is at Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver. Online at DunbarLumber.com. Have they stopped scoring in Alberta yet?
Yeah, they have, but I think Mike Smith is still having nightmares based on that game. Man. 70, his save percentage, folks. 7-0-0.
Oh, his save percentage. I thought it was his age.
Wow.
Shots fired?
I thought I was the Mike Smith is not good enough to be a starter.
Got
like,
it.
I thought I was that guy, and now Bick has joined the evil side here. Or the good side. I'm not sure which one it is.
That was a rough showing for Mike Smith.
That was a rough showing.
The rational side, I think. The smart side.
Absolutely. That was a rough showing for every single goalie in that game. When Mikko Koskinen is the goalie that has the high save percentage at 865, every goalie struggled. Every goalie had a rough time.
So, did you guys enjoy that game?
I did.
Was it your favorite game of the year?
I don't know if it was my favorite game of the year, but I enjoyed it. It was
chaos.
Awesome.
If you don't have a horse in the race, that was enjoyable, man.
I turned it off at 6-1. I was like, seriously? I was like, oh, there's no defense in this game, whatever. No defense. It's not real hockey.
To take you behind the curtain, in our group chat, we're talking about this game, and Vic's like, yeah, I tuned out at 6-1.
Yeah. I didn't tune back in either.
You really?
So 6-5.
Come on. Even when they tied it up.
You were doing
clearly there was no defense. I was already onto the NHL draft.
You were doing, like, the Wolverine looking at the picture of, like, Radek Faxa. I just want him back.
Luke Clendenning. Come on, man. We need some shutdown centers. No, this
game would be so much better if the Stars were playing.
Where is Esa Lindell when you need him?
I was tuned in. But, I mean, that game's not real hockey. That was peak chaos. That was like too many kids in the ball pit and just like, what is happening? How do we maintain composure in here?
Yeah, but if you're the parent of one of those kids in there, it's not fun. But if you are just a rando standing there watching, it is awesome seeing one of the kids getting hit in the head with the ball, you know, calling for his mom. He's crying. Like, that was what it was. Mike Smith was that kid that was looking towards his parents and saying, what do I do next?
I'm still trying to comprehend just how chaotic that entire game was. Because, you know, we were getting ready for the physical nature, the nastiest of the Battle of Alberta. And, you know, we had Tim Hunter on and we played clips of, like, things that he was doing back in the day and being such an antagonist. And you wanted this series to go to those types of places. And you got that, Lucic, McDavid, and all this sort of stuff. There was plenty of that. And that almost became like the third or fourth most important thing, even though it met a lot of people's expectations, because everything else was just chaos. It's the only way I can put it. It's just chaos.
And it might have had like a lot of cheapiness at the start if Mike Smith doesn't whiff on that first goal. Like that first goal basically changed the game where you're saying, all right, we got to set the tone. We're going to come in with an aggressive forecheck. Oh, actually, we scored. We don't need any of that right now because the guy let in a goal. So to me, I think the flow of the game where you're trying to set that message, set that tone, it wasn't really required from the Flames' perspective because they had two goals in a minute, man. So that's why I think, yeah, hey, listen, it was a weird one. It was a wacky one. But for that game where it's like peak valleys, drama all over the everywhere, even after 40, near the end of the second period, you're saying, if Markstrom allows one more, mm-hmm. Calgary Flames are actually in trouble. For a team that scored six goals in this game, you're actually thinking, man, Calgary can't allow one more. That's how wild it was.
It was funny, too, because at 6-1, it did feel like a lot of priors got confirmed. It's like, this is what you should have expected. Flames are significantly better than the Oilers, and everything gets flipped on its head. And honestly, I don't think you can take anything out of that game. I think both teams just burn it and say, let's restart the series at game two. You guys are up 1-0. We get it. But let's just restart the series. Let's refocus. Now, we can all have fun about it and be like, wow, what a wild game that was. I'm not sure what you're supposed to take out of that game.
I think what you can take out is maybe goaltending will be key in the series. That is clear. That's one thing we can guarantee. What team gets it? I still have faith. It's not a wash to me.
Well,
I think Markstrom is the better goalie.
Cam Moon, though, our buddy, our pal in Edmonton, trending up. Like, in the, it didn't look good for him at first.
No, it didn't.
Right?
People were tweeting us. It's like, really?
People were tweeting us. We had the don't at me come in yesterday. People were tweeting during the game and saying, is it a wash? At the end of the game, yeah, Jacob Markstrom.
Kind of was.
It was. Jacob Markstrom was closer to Mike Smith's save percentage than he was Mikko Koskinen's. That's not a good sign. But who do you have faith in rebounding in this series? I think most people would say Jacob Markstrom because over the last couple of years, he's been the more consistent goaltender. But did that raise eyebrows and, you know, questions? Oh, yeah, buddy, it did. Because even if you have a defensively sound team, you probably want to open up against the Oilers here. You want to hit him in transition. And the way that Calgary won during the regular season was, yeah, they'd open it sometimes. And Jacob Markstrom, he might not have to make that many saves, but when they relied on him, he'd do it. Man, in game one, he played, you know, almost to the level of Mike Smith. And Mike Smith had one of the worst games in his career. One of the worst games in his career.
Yeah.
And Jacob Markstrom was not far off.
Dan Vladar texting in. Do not drag me in this. I had a good game last night.
Vladar had a strong hat game yesterday.
Did he throw it?
I don't think he did. We know Keith Kachuk didn't.
Yeah.
Those are bald man problems, aren't they? Like, you keep the hat. You got your hat sitting right next to you.
Hats cost a lot of money nowadays. And plus, you got to throw it over the netting. I don't know. It's tough.
Okay, I have a take there. If Keith Kachuk isn't throwing his hat...
Nobody has to?
No. You know the Kachuks, anytime they sign a contract, it's going to be a tough negotiation. If this man doesn't even want to throw his hat... You think they're going to give up a few bucks in contract negotiations?
Bradtree Living just sweating right now. I'm like, oh my goodness. We got to get ready for that offseason RFA negotiation.
This guy is not even going to throw his hat.
650, keep chiming in with your thoughts. Alistair and Clearwater. The Flames-Oilers game was like Adams hockey when the coach yells, everyone on the ice at the end of practice.
It was like a Tim Hortons, Timbits game in the intermission. It kind of felt like that at a moment. You actually oohed and aahed when their save was made rather than the goal. It was just so rare.
When we were talking, hear this other text as well. Sorry, 6 goals, not 4, should be enough to win a game, McDavid. You know, we were talking, because we had a don't at me, a bold prediction the other day. And someone said McDavid will have 30 points by the end of the series. And we were just kind of saying, well, if he gets 4 in one game, that shifts that conversation real fast. You know what he did in game one? He got 4 points. So he's already at 18 points in the playoffs. Suddenly, 30 doesn't seem like that far of an accomplishment for Connor McDavid.
Vic, if the Edmonton Oilers get swept, let's just say they get swept, but he plays like that, he'll still hit 30. He'll have 16 points in this series over 4 games, 4 points a game, and he'll still hit 30. And that's if they get swept. So if they play a few more games in the series, yeah, he's going to get there, man. Okay, the way that they played him physical. They're trying to engage, you know, Milan Lucic tosses him. Nikita Zadorov, who played pretty much that matchup role alongside Eric Goodbranson. Can't believe it, I'm saying that. But Zadorov was still a plus at the end of the night.
Sure.
Which is pretty crazy if you think about it. But if you're essentially saying, we can contain this guy to a certain point, the rest of the lineup beat us. The rest of the lineup stepped up yesterday, too.
Mm-hmm.
But so did Calgary. It's like, I like the physical approach. But with that matchup role, without Chris Tanev in the lineup, you know, you are giving up something. You are giving up something. So for the one game, you'll excuse Zadorov as the matchup guy. How often is that going to happen, though? How often can you survive with Goodbranson and Zadorov, you know, occupying that role?
So I just said, you know, there's nothing you can take out of that game. What was the most sustainable thing from that game? Because honestly, I think you can make a case for Connor McDavid. And... not that it's always going to be 4 points, but he was so dynamic every time on the ice. And I know Calgary took some shots at him, but again, like there was a gravity to him every time he was on the ice. And I'm just curious, like if he's this guy now, is Calgary going to have to put up 3 goals every game? And they might be able to, but it's not going to be 9 every night.
Well, it's been 9 the last 2 times they've played. So, hey, facts only. The last 2 times Edmonton has played Calgary, in late March, Calgary put up 9-5 in that game. They put up 9. And in this game, 9-6. So, I guess the question here is, can you get Connor McDavid to put up points? Or if you're Calgary, you're saying, hey, man, you're going to have your 3 or 4 points. That's fine. But you know what your team can't do? They can't stop us. And it feels like the last 2 games Calgary's played against Edmonton, The regular season, it's not a Picasso. Daryl Sutter, probably not very happy with the effort that his team put together defensively. But if I'm looking at, are you okay with McDavid getting his? You probably are if you're Calgary, because you know on the other side, Edmonton can't stop you. They can't. They had success early on in the year, maybe in the first Battle of Alberta. But beyond that, it's been all Calgary all the time. And that's why I look at, you know, four games that they played this year in the regular season against Calgary. Connor had 7 points in four games, right? Almost 2 points per game. And in the back end of those, they got absolutely trampled by the Flames. So it is something where you could even see Connor hit 30 points in this series. It may not mean anything with the overall result.
I think there's two things, because the goaltending isn't sustainable. Like we're trashing Mike Smith a bit here, like, he will have better games.
Yeah, he will. Come on, man.
Jacob Markstrom will have better games. Mikko Koskinen might even feature later on in the series, although he's not getting game two start. But like, he will have better games. So the goaltending at that level is not sustainable. It will revert back to a more standard level. But Connor McDavid, I think he's going to produce points in this series. Matt Tkachuk, is his goal scoring sustainable? What to you was the most sustainable thing in that game last night, 650-650?
So the McDavid thing is, I agree with that. He could be the most sustainable aspect of the series, but I think the Calgary Flames scoring depth is sustainable. They've shown it all year long. They've got guys, sure, we focus on their top line putting up, you know, 40 goals each, essentially all of those players, but they got Mangiapane, they got Tyler Toffoli, Blake Coleman. He's a player, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on as well when it comes to across the league. But if you want players to step up between April and June, Coleman does that. Like, he might give you, what, 12 goals? He might give you 15 goals during the regular season. But there's certain types of performers that you know are going to thrive under conditions that you know, war of attrition element, or that find space when space is so difficult to find in the playoffs. So I actually think the sustainability, you know, one of the more sustainable things is the Calgary Flames depth. They're not going to put up a 9 spot every single game. Are they capable of putting up 5 or 6? Sure they are. And if they get a much better effort from Jacob Markstrom, yeah, they did light up teams during the regular season. Let's not forget that.
650-650. Keep coming in with your thoughts. Bick Nizar and Randeep Janda. We wanted to touch on some Canuck stuff yesterday. We got into a conversation that we didn't really get to explore because of a few time constraints yesterday. But we wanted to get back into it today because you were talking about a player yesterday, Kasperi Kapanen. And is there that profile of player as far as kind of buy low targets? Is this something that Canucks should be trying to explore? And we want to kind of expand on that conversation. Trying to find more guys across the league that opportunities just aren't there. New regimes come in and value players differently, which, you know, the Vancouver Canucks are going through with a new regime as well. Just analyzing where the Canucks can make up some of the gaps on the roster based off circumstances outside of Vancouver.
Well, we've heard Jim Rutherford talk about wanting to get younger and faster, right? And there's obviously limits you have as the Vancouver Canucks. We know the cap situation. But are there potential moments where you're saying, and players across the league that you're looking at and saying, it's not working in their current market, or maybe they're surplus to requirements. Who are those targets? And the name I mentioned yesterday, Kasperi Kapanen, obvious links to Jim Rutherford, who not only had him in the system in Pittsburgh, traded him away, brought him back. Patrick Alvin was a part of that scouting staff as well when he was drafted. There's obvious links there. This is a player that has lost his swagger. He doesn't have that same, you know, cachet to him that he did a couple of years ago when he signed that $3.2 million contract. But is that a player that you're saying brings speed, has scoring ability, just has kind of not been able to produce the last couple of years? That's a player I say, okay, intriguing to me, because acquisition cost matters here. You're looking at a player that, who, because he hasn't played all that well the last 2 years, the regime might be out on. Whether it's Ron Hextall, Brian Burke, we know Berkey has a certain mentality when it comes to players. He wants, you know, truculence. And Kasperi has not been engaged in that regard, right? So I look at that player and say, especially if they don't qualify him, that's a great player to be having on your radar. Even if they do qualify him, you got to remember, even though he's got a $3.2 million contract this year, his qualifying offer, his actual salary this year was $2.5 million. So it's lower. It's not a Brock Besser special, which is much higher. So That's one player I look at and say, all right, that's an individual that I would see maybe a fit, especially if you're trying to add more speed to the forward group, somebody that can play the style that the Pittsburgh Penguins did under a Jim Rutherford and other teams. But is he the only individual? No, there's not. There's a league full of these guys where you start looking across, Bick, and we created a bit of a list. You got your list, I got mine. But if you are moving out salary, Jason Dickinson, maybe a Tyler Myers, maybe other individuals that can you can afford, I think Kasperi Kapanen's on that list to me with those obvious links. And continuing the Pittsburgh conversation, I think John Marino as well, mm-hmm. right? Like John Marino, he's been off a couple of years. He hasn't played that same level that we saw maybe 2 or 3 years ago. He's got links to the current regime, but another individual that you're saying, all right, it's not going to be the same acquisition cost. You're going to have to pay more for a right-hand shot defenseman. But is that an individual, two guys on that team? Zoom out. You can pick other teams as well. Come with your suggestions, 650, 650. But those are two guys that pop up immediately on the top of my list because there's need for speed and there's a need for right shot defensemen who can play a certain way. They have to be on top of the list.
There's one other guy from that organization I kind of want to highlight as well. Now, look, it's easiest obvious links with Vancouver and Pittsburgh. But one of the things I look at when you're talking about buy low scenarios, especially in the offseason when there's been regime changes, is like I'm a big believer is talent is talent, right? It's this is what this guy is capable of. But when new management groups come in, new coaching staffs come in, do they come in with a new philosophy where this player's abilities don't match what they're trying to create? And in that circumstance, do prospects kind of lose a bit of footing or raise up a bit because they're trying to create a different style of play, whatever it is? And so looking at kind of bubble players who haven't kind of cracked through to the NHL roster or consistent minutes, do teams view how they want to play hockey differently? For instance, like last year, Chris Drury comes in. It's like, you know what? We want to be a bit more physical.
Yeah.
So someone that's definitely better in a Buchnevich, his value decreases through the eyes of the Rangers, through nothing that 31 other teams have done, but his value is decreased to the Rangers. And so the perception is everything in this conversation. Someone like Sam Poulin out in Pittsburgh, like a 21st overall pick a few years ago, just where is Pittsburgh at on a player like that? That this new Hextall Burke regime comes in, are they in the same place where Rutherford Alvin were when they were running the show there and say, hey, we still value this player the same way they did? Or does someone's standing kind of decrease a bit?
And then that's a very, you know, interesting player to bring up, because if you look at Pittsburgh and what they seem to be wanting to do, and this is, you know, no official confirmation, mm-hmm. but it feels like they do want to get younger, right? Ron Hextall's MO a little bit is to be, all right, we're not doing a rebuild, but something's got to give here. Poulin would be a player that you'd say, all right, you probably keep in. But your point about regimes is really important. If from what you've seen, do you like or do you not like? And I think that's where the Kapanen question as well, mm-hmm. is that, hey, this is a guy that's not as young as Poulin, but he's a 25-year-old that they've seen the last 2 years and said, all right, maybe it's not going to work here. We had this question coming in. So you say there's this cap situation, and then you want to bring a struggling $3 million player. The one thing I would say is, struggling, yes, but that's the whole idea about a buy low. $3 million, not necessarily. $3 million is what he's making this year. But as I mentioned, the qualifying offer is lower. You can actually get him at a lower price. And Bick, on top of that, if he's not qualified, which there's rumblings in Pittsburgh that he may not be qualified, then he ain't making anywhere near $3 million. So that's why buy low is important. Poulin is an interesting one, because if you're trying to get younger, though, and for a team that doesn't have many other prospects, that's a dangerous move, right? That's a dangerous move, because you're trying to say, all right, who can jump up to the NHL level and make us a younger team? But it is a valid question, because every regime has their thoughts on players. And we know Berkey is pretty steadfast in his ways. If he makes an opinion on a player, he's generally sticking to his guns.
This one is Noah Dobson with an offer sheet. You offer sheet Noah Dobson, Lou Lamoriello calls you and says, thanks for doing my work. Appreciate it. We'll match that immediately. He's one of the more popular players we get into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. And it's because he's really good. And it's because the Islanders are going to want to keep him. And a lot of the offers we get, I kind of smirk at, because it's like, yeah, Not really.
Oh, no. And with Noah Dobson, a part of this is also, let's just say in a perfect world, the Islanders say, yeah, we can't do it. Let's just say you make it happen. This is a guy that picked up 50 points this year in 80 games. You're also looking at compensation then.
Mm-hmm.
What's that price figure? We know defensemen, once they're coming out of their ELC, it's not, oh, here's $2 million for you. No, they're making real money. So if he's in that $4 to $5 million range, you're giving up, you know, a first and a third. If he's making potentially even more than that, like,
I think you got to go more than that.
Well, if you're doing an offer sheet, it can't be a little bit of money. It's got to be a lot. You got to overwhelm the Islanders. So you're probably looking in that, what, $6 million range? A first, second, third? For a team that doesn't have many picks, doesn't have any young guys, that's a tough move to make as well.
650. Again, a lot of high-end thoughts coming in here. Kirby Doc, what about that? Now, he started really hot and was thought to be like, okay, kind of the next thing. But I don't necessarily look at him as like someone that's flipped completely to, oh, this guy's not going to become what we thought he is. Time to buy low on him. Because I feel like he still has to go through his like Sam Bennett years.
Yeah. That's a player, a couple of things there. The regime is different, but Davidson's still a part of that group, mm-hmm. right? He's a part of that organization, so it's not necessarily a new regime. On top of that, they're going through a rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would you not stay the course a little bit to say, hey, let's see what we have in this player? To your point, if we give him more time, he can mature as his career kind of goes on here in the next year or two. We got this one from Rager. Obligatory Dante Fabro text. True.
Popular one.
It's true.
It's a popular one we get.
Lee coming in with, speaking as a Penguins fan, you've pillaged enough of our front office. Now leave our damn players alone. It's the game.
So there's this one from Brad in Cloverdale as well. And look, it doesn't need to be just the trade market to explore this.
Could be free agency, could be anything.
Could be free agents. Now, we're looking for kind of buy low guys here. And Brad's suggesting Ilya Mikheyev. Leafs won't be able to afford him, which is facts. But is that a buy low guy? Like, I feel like that's a good season. If you're Mikheyev, you're kind of looking to go get paid this summer.
And his agent, Dan Milstein, has pretty much said that he loves Toronto. He'd love to come back in some way or form. But man, when you have a season like that, you're also taking offers. Mm-hmm. You're also seeing what's going on. So you're going to have to pay, you know, price of acquisition. When we talk about trades is one thing, but price of acquisition and free agency, there's a couple of players that have had unbelievable years. Mm-hmm. And Mikheyev is one of them. Like, the PK scoring that many goals, a league-leading, you know, number of goals for the Toronto Maple Leafs this year. Engvall and Mikheyev were a large part of that, and he's going to get paid as a result.
We got an Engvall text as well. Now, he's a restricted free agent, so maybe you can work something out there. But, again, a guy who's at a nice value right now is at a buy-low candidate. Now, with Mikheyev, it's you watch a player, like, really exciting player, hard worker, skates well, can PK, but you're paying a premium for him right now. What about someone like Zach Aston-Reese? It's the same concept.
Yeah.
UFA in Anaheim, got traded there midseason, part of the...
Another Pittsburgh connection. No, you used to play there.
That's part of this, yep. Right? If he hits UFA, can you get him at a price point, familiarity with the management group? Management knows what they're going to get out of him. Someone they developed, by the way. It's Mikheyev light, essentially. One guy might cost you 3+. One guy might cost you sub-2, somewhere in that range. And that's a scenario that you're trying to look for here.
Yeah, with Zach Aston-Reese, he's a little bit older, so 27, yes. You wouldn't have to most likely commit term to him, right?
Rutherford did say, hey, if it's the right guy, we're okay giving a bit for older guys.
We're willing to wait a little bit longer in free agency and get that player. Zach Aston-Reese, I like him. I like the size that he has. He's a big boy, you know, over 200 pounds. He has... Definitely bottom six player. He gives a little something different. We've heard a lot from Yannick Hansen's mentioned it numerous times on this show, where the Canucks bottom six, especially that fourth line, a lot of the same thing. Now, you add a player that maybe is not going to score that much, but he's in that 10 goal range. Maybe if he has a great year, he's looking towards 15. That's a player that I could say, okay, at least he offers something different in the bottom six.
He's got some sandpaper to him.
We're going to keep this conversation going, though, because I got one or two more suggestions.
Oh, yeah, we got plenty here.
And we got a lot coming in on the text line as well.
So we'll read your text throughout the course of the show on this. Some buy-low candidates for the Vancouver Canucks, whether by trade or through free agency. We'll do wrong answers only in a bit as well, but we'll talk to Peter Labardius next. Flames color analyst. Busy, busy evening for him. Curious if his voice has recovered after all those goals. I will talk to Peter Labardius next here on the Home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to the show, Bick Nazar and Randy Janda. Here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. We'll connect with Peter Labardius here in just a second. But more thoughts coming into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, Randy. What are they saying?
We got this one kind of backing up what we were talking about in the last segment. I think the Canucks will go after a player that is not really doing well and give him a chance to get back his career around, because the Canucks in the past have done that before. Also, you got to stay under the cap in a way. So you can't go necessarily after a premium player. You have to go for an undervalued player. You have to go with a player that's probably seen some rough times in the last couple of years.
And look, I know that's inherently scary. But like, oh, what is this guy going to do? He hasn't shown anything. But that's the point. It's like you buy low and you make up the value on the other side.
You know what it is, right? We've been paying attention a lot to business news the last couple of days. We've seen the stocks really take a hit. Maybe I'm speaking for my portfolio. So it scares people to say, why would you take a risk like that? But that's when you're trying to win along. And one of the things that Rutherford and Alvin have said since day one is European free agents, collegiate free agents, and we gotta find players. You know, Sedin said this.
Mm-hmm.
Players have to outperform their contracts. So this is a way that you can do that, where you sign a player that maybe hasn't been able to hit it with a new regime or has under-delivered in the market, but does it fit what you're trying to do? Does the stylistic fit work? And you have an informed opinion based on that. And yes, you take a bit of a risk. That's what we're talking about today.
650-650, keep coming in with the thoughts. We'll get to that conversation in just a little bit. But let's talk to Peter Labardius, who joins us now, Sportsnet 960 Flames color analyst. Peter, how are you?
I am fine. How are you?
We are doing great. Are you well rested after that wild game last night?
No, I haven't been well rested for months, but certainly not after last night. Although it was much more difficult to find some sleep after Game 7 than it was after Game 1.
I bet. Okay, we don't have a horse in the race, so therefore I enjoyed that game. I thought it was wild. But, you know, in Calgary, what was the mood after that? When you get the W, of course, but it was just everything. It was a roller coaster ride of a game.
I thought it was, to be as kind as I can, I thought it was a complete slop fest. That for me was not playoff hockey in any way, shape, or form. Those two teams, their final meeting of the regular season, the Flames won that game 9-5, and everybody went in, including myself, talking about, well, we're never going to see another one like that again. Yes, we did. So, I don't know. I'm a bit of a hockey purist that way. I much prefer hard fought every single shift, every face-off, every special teams matters. But I can understand from a fan's perspective why it would have been an enjoyable roller coaster ride. And to be honest, I can't stand roller coasters. So that probably fits even for me, too.
You're speaking to my heart here, because I'm pro-defense on this show. And Randy Eep and Jamie are always come after me, like, oh, just enjoy the entertaining factor. And I was like, you know what, last night, sure, it was entertaining, but it wasn't necessarily good hockey.
No, that's it. That's what it was for me. You know, I think the misnomer, at least from where I watch and where I sit on the whole matter, is, you know, I saw it in the last series. You know, for some people, they'd call that very boring or low event, and, you know, Daryl Sutter's had some fun with that exact reference, but I'll take those games over what I saw last night every day, shape and form, because what you saw last night, it's fun once in a while for sure, but that's a unicorn. That's not, you know, neither team, especially the Oilers, who have made such great strides in how they check and how they defend. Well, you know, Dallas, you couldn't get into the middle of the ice surface against Dallas with a bazooka. Last night, you could have driven a small car into the slot early in that game and had time to operate with it. So we'll see where it goes. The best part is, though, for Calgary, you give up a four-point night to Connor McDavid. Your goalie has arguably his toughest night of the whole year. You give up six, and you still win a playoff game. If I threw that one at you going in, what would you have thought the Flames' chances would have been? I know what you'd have said. Absolutely zero.
No, absolutely. And you talk about Jacob Markstrom there. That was such a weird game for him as well, because it felt like, all right, you got all the confidence in the world when you strike and you hit Mike Smith a couple of times within a minute. But what do you make of Jacob Markstrom's game yesterday? Is that just a game where you're saying, all right, bad game, throw it away? Or is that something that, you know, he's coming out of a series where he didn't face all that much action? Was that just rust of maybe not getting enough activity during that series?
No, I don't think it was rust because, you know, if you watch that series against Dallas really close, no. Was he Jake Oettinger in the series? No. Did he have to be? But did Jacob play excellent hockey in a difficult situation where you can go long stretches of time without facing much of anything? And then, you know, you're in nothing but one goal games where every good scoring chance might be the difference in a game and eventually in the series. The whole thing, guys, to me, it even felt this way in the building last night before the game started. It felt to me like, as hyped as everybody was, and they are, and we've waited three decades for this, both teams look like either they were out of rhythm or that maybe there was still a bit of an emotional hangover from winning Game 7 for two teams who, you know, in recent memory, haven't exactly had a lot of playoff success.
Talking to Peter Labardius here, Sportsnet 960's Flames color analyst. So on Markstrom, would you have brought him back after a 40? Because they were talking about it on the TV broadcast as well. Maybe it was time for a poll. Now, look, it worked out in the end, and I would naturally say, you know, patience is probably what's best and back our guy. What were you thinking for Sutter's decision there after 40?
I didn't even think about the possibility of taking him out. Didn't even cross my mind. Did not even cross my mind. He is your guy. Was he having a tough night? Absolutely. You know, you're going into the third, you're in a one-goal game against Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers. Who do I trust to figure it out for 20 minutes? And with no disrespect to Daniel Vladar, I'm not putting him in that situation. No chance. Not for me.
There was discussion on the TV broadcast a little bit, but you're shutting that one down. No, and I agree with you on that right?
And I know there was,
yep.
And I have incredible respect for where it started, too. That's just my perspective.
Yeah, if he's your guy, you stick with him, and he's a Vezina finalist as well. We should remember that.
He's one of the best goalies in the league, and the best thing for him last night is that he still won a game. It was arguably, I'll be the first to admit it, his worst game maybe the entire season. He's never likely to have another one. But, you know, we don't see these very often. But the only part of last night that reminded me a little bit of olden times is back in the day, for those enough to remember, Grant Fuhr won a lot of playoff games where he might give up four or five. But if you had to get the sixth, chances are you weren't going to.
It's a great comparison.
That reminded me a little, not a lot, because usually Grant was better, you know, than Jacob happened to be last night to get it to four or five. But still, you know, even at 6-6, somebody's got to reel it in and shut it down.
So you talked about the four-point effort from Connor McDavid. Awesome to see, but the Calgary Flames did play him physically. They did engage. They kind of tried to toss him around a little bit, whether it was Lucic, Zadorov, or others. If he gets his points, whether it's two or three points or maybe four, but you wear him down over a 5-6-7-game series. Like, this is a strategy. A lot of teams, they can't even hit him. They can't even catch him. Is this something that you expect to see done by the Calgary Flames for the rest of the series? Because it felt like they were pretty successful to a certain degree.
I think, guys, no matter who the elite level players are, you have got to make their life as miserable as possible. It's just, you know, it's no different for me when you talk about the last series and you're dealing with people like Klingberg and Haskinen. Well, when you get chances to finish checks and make their life miserable, you've got to do it. And so I wouldn't run out of the way looking for it because, as we know, and I'll be the first to tell you, I've never seen Connor McDavid play hockey like this before. Mm-hmm. I really haven't. And not in these kind of situations. He is off the charts right now. He's on a different planet. So the best way to check him is be hard on him every chance you get and having the puck yourself. I said going into the series on our shows all day yesterday and for the last few days, the best way for the Calgary Flames to win this series is to certainly lead this series in offensive zone time. Because Connor McDavid is going to create and make things happen. There is no doubt about that. So the more you can have the puck and make him check you, I think that's the best way to go about your business against him.
We'll let you go on this one because I was asking these guys earlier too. Not that you can take a lot out of a game like that, 9-6.
Nope.
But what to you is the most sustainable thing that translates to the rest of the series? Is it McDavid? For me, it was just because I think he's in nuclear mode right now. The goaltending will obviously improve, but what's something that out of that game can be sustainable for the rest of the series?
Well, I think, you know, there's still part of Calgary's foundation and what they do that, you know, was very much in evidence last night. And that is, you know, they're a possession team. They're a shot volume group. You know, they are at their best when they keep pucks in your zone and move it and hem you in and make it miserable. I've thought with this team, especially this year, but for a number of years, when their offensive zone forecheck is connected and it stays that way through the middle of the ice in the neutral zone, they're a hard team to deal with. When they get spread out or locked down in the middle by other people, it can get difficult for them. But that, like I said, the recipe that I do think is not as sustainable as last night, but they have to win probably, well, for sure, the offensive zone time battle, in my opinion. And the other thing is, you know, who's going to get their special teams going? And you know the Oilers will, like you said. You know McDavid's going to get chances and get points. But you can't give them four a night. Daryl Sutter said today, and I loved it, and I'll leave you with this. He said, not quite to this exact words, but he goes, if we're going to allow Connor McDavid to get four every night, Connor, enjoy the next series.
Before I let you go, actually, what's an off day look like for you? We know you got to let you go, but what are you doing right now?
I am about to call four hockey games at a draft day international prospects tournament with some of the best 2008 born young men across Western Canada, and somewhat, I guess, fitting considering today is draft day in the Western Hockey mm-hmm. League, and these guys are part of a pretty fine group because I've seen quite a number of them play during the course of the season that will be very antsy going into this day next year.
You're the best. You're the hardest working person. Always appreciate it, and have a good day. Enjoy that.
Okay, guys. I sure will. Thanks.
That is Peter Labardius joining us, Sportsnet 960 caller analyst for the Flames.
Look at that, man. Calling NHLers of the present one day, calling NHLers of the future the next day.
I think we should all be so lucky to have a vocation that we enjoy as much as Labardius enjoys his. Like calling games, broadcasting sports. Like, he just did one of the most high-profile games in the NHL calendar in years last night. He's back out there today calling 14-year-olds. It's fantastic.
The best.
Okay, boys, I volunteer. Tomorrow, we'll be at the Nat.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
later
we will.
Nat, we're going to be there. We're going to be doing the show from there and also, you know, hanging around, watching the game, of course.
Also doing Confession Fridays.
Absolutely.
From the board.
Yes. Absolutely. But I volunteer to color commentate whatever beverages you drink, and any hilarity that ensues between you two guys later on.
Calm down.
On a Friday night.
Calm down.
I will color commentate that.
It'll be a lot of fun, though, tomorrow. We'll be at the Nat,
yep.
At the porch, doing the show there from 11 to 1 tomorrow. It is a nooner at the Nat on a Friday. Looks like it's going to be a gorgeous day.
An outdoor version of Confession Friday.
Oh, yeah. How's that going to shake?
That's going to be spicy.
That could be spicy.
Do not know what's going to happen. I'm not prepared.
And we've been giving tickets away to that game.
Yeah.
We actually have another pair to give away today,
yes,
as well. So stay tuned. So if you want to like come by, roll up,
and
confess in person,
yeah. Whoa.
Feel free.
I don't know if I'd be prepared
I don't think
for that.
Do we have one of those things where you can change your voice? Like,
I don't know if I can make like eye contact with someone while they're making a confession.
No, but that's why we look straight. We can't look at the person while they're doing it.
But
maybe,
if I know they exist...
Maybe we'll have like a board in between us, like an actual confession.
If I know they exist and they're in my realm, I don't know, man.
Maybe they can like write it on a little note and slide it over the table to us so we can look at it. Like the in-person version of texting.
The Canadians are going to call and say, yeah, you guys don't need to be here tomorrow. You got...
The in-person version of texting.
But it'd be great to see if you...
The analog version.
If you ended up winning tickets or you want to go to the Nooner tomorrow, buy tickets, you know, obviously hit up the Canadians website. It'll be nice to see you tomorrow. It's been a while since we've been at the Nat.
For Canadians are back at the Nat. For tickets or info, visit CanadiansBaseball.com. See you at the Nat. And again, we'll be there tomorrow pregame and we'll be hanging out for the game as well. Randeep breaking out some color commentary.
Yeah, pregame? No, that's going to be postgame. That color
during the game.
Yeah, definitely during the game.
During the game.
Right, post our show, I think, you mean, because we're not going to be drinking during the show.
Okay. Maybe you.
Okay,
I'm joking.
I wasn't aware of that update. All right, that's
joking.
Good to know.
Confession Friday already in advance. Actually, confession. I'll do a confession Friday here on Thursday.
No, come on. You got to save it for Friday, man.
But it's a harmless one.
What's that?
I think I'm a cold leftover convert.
Oh, yeah.
Confession Friday.
I've cold pilled you. Is what the kids would say.
Wow.
Wait, what do the kids say?
Like,
red pill,
like red pill or black pill or something? I don't even know.
It's the Matrix.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. You were the one who made the biggest deal that he ate his food.
I know.
Cold.
But
and now you've joined him in the.
But what did I say I would do? I said I'm going to try it out for a week or a month, and I tried it out.
Okay, what
like,
did you have today? Cold, or what will you have?
I've got some chili.
Wait.
Beef chili.
Let's go.
So chili, one of the things that's supposed to be eaten warm. Like,
I know.
Chili, man. That's the benefit of a chili. It's supposed to be warm. It's supposed to make you like.
See, Bick's not just. That's like advanced level cold leftovers already. I'm very proud.
I'm disgusted.
Just accelerated program. But today will be the final test. Because if this one comes through, then I might be a total convert.
Wow. I've never been more disappointed in Bick in my life.
Look, I like to try things that are working for other people. And
I'm very influential.
Slow down here.
If you've got some sort of cold leftover restaurant, Jamie's the influencer for you.
Uh-huh.
If you're a convenience store that sells cold food in any sort of fridge, get this guy. Get this guy to eat some sandwiches or some cold burritos.
All right. We didn't do it earlier. Let's get to it now. We love doing it. It is your submissions for wrong answers only. Let's get into it. After that Battle of Alberta, our wrong answers only today. How will Mike Smith win back Oilers fans' confidence in Game 2?
So he's been named the starter by Woodcroft. How does he win back the confidence? So you get the starter's crease. For me, it's quite easy, guys. You have to fight Milan Lucic. You know, it's like, what's that saying?
Why are you giving him an unenviable task?
No. Here? Hey, man. It's like, how do you get confidence? Remember that in every movie, like every show in Oz, there's always that scene when you walk into prison and you fight the toughest guy you can see. Mike Smith has to walk into that game and fight the toughest dude on the ice. His name happens to be Milan Lucic. You have to do it.
So that'll sway everyone?
At least people will be like, all right, this guy's got his heart in it.
Well, he's not making saves, but at least he's fighting people.
At least he wants to win to such a degree that he is taking on the pound for pound, probably toughest, not maybe the heavyweight champion of the NHL.
I'm going to say, because it's right at Mike Smith's wheelhouse, too. Score a goal.
Ooh,
score okay. a goal. Based on yesterday,
that might be a right answer.
Skate it out to half and just wire one, man. Like he's not going to score on Jacob Markstrom.
Full-on manual goalie from NHL 94.
Do
just
it,
skate
man.
Up to the neutral zone.
Create a rebound.
Just shoot at an angle.
Can you imagine Connor McDavid skating from his own blue line? And them timing it perfectly that there's like it lands right at Markstrom's feet.
And meanwhile,
just full speed.
So what you're saying is he goes up to neutral ice. Jesse Puljujärvi, because he hasn't been able to do anything else in these playoffs, is manning the goal while Mike Smith is in the neutral zone.
Yeah.
I got one. Another one, actually, before we get to the fans and the listeners of the show. How will Mike Smith win back Oilers fans' confidence in Game 2? Sign with the Flames again.
Minor Matt says he retires. Harsh.
We got some ones I was going to read, but I can't actually. Here we go.
Yeah.
We got Darn, the Lucic fight was my idea. Stay out of my mind. Riccio? It's Randeep.
Yeah.
Thanks for the text, though, Dino.
Three-putt Shane texts in, Mike Smith will win back fans by having cold chili for his pregame meal, then posting a shutout, and cold chili will become a favorite pregame meal for all goalies and then nationwide. Let's go!
And Jamie.
Cold chili squad, we're out here.
Someone's already roasting us here. Actually, we'll get to that one later. Rookies, you don't have to fight the biggest guy. You just stare everyone down when you first enter the range.
Okay, but we also see those scenes in the cafeteria. There's always that throwdown that happens in the cafeteria.
Is that what they call it in Oz? Cafeteria?
I don't know if it's called that.
Sounds very pleasant.
No, in Oz it's called something else.
Wrong answers only. Shave his beard. If he showed up clean shaving tomorrow, that would be...
No, man. You look more intimidating with the beard. He comes in clean shaven. He's going to be like, who the hell is this
guy? If he comes in clean shaven, I'm like, oh, this guy's taking it seriously.
Or he shaves his head.
Or he's shook. To me, if he shaved everything, I'd be like, oh, this guy's in his own head, man.
Wait, so all people that shave their heads are
that's
shook?
Right.
Perma shook?
No.
What are you talking about?
When I see someone with a shaved head, I assume that they're deeply unwell.
So your co-host, Canuck Central, or Canuck Hour as well, is listening to this.
No, it's not that he has a shaved head. It's like the thought process, I have to change something up. That's what would concern me.
Okay, but if he rolled in with a shaved head and that same beard, he'd look a little dangerous. If he did the opposite and he rolled in with no beard, but that's still that same, you know, haircut he has, then he'd look a little weird. I'm with Bick on this one, I think, or the texture. I think you go in with a shaved head, it might intimidate.
Mike Smith has to rent out the amusement park at West Edmonton Mall for the kids, Jason and South Van.
Yeah, they might have to do that real quick if they keep
on losing
games.
You know what
also
got slandered really fast yesterday? West Edmonton Mall. It was like, oh, here's Edmonton disappointing in the playoffs, just like West Edmonton Mall. Is West Edmonton Mall disappointing?
I've never been.
Really?
I have a friend who grew up in Edmonton across the street from West Edmonton Mall. No, she loves it.
Oh, yeah.
So it can't have been that disappointing.
Yeah.
I went when I was like a toddler. Never back. So I have no informed opinion on it. But like, what's the... Okay, they've got a roller coaster. They've got a skating
pool.
A pool. Like 19 Orange Juliuses, I assume.
One for every corner of the mall.
Exactly. Like
probably just a couple
of New York fries.
A lot of stores, I would think.
Yeah. I've been to Edmonton twice. And both times I've gone to West Edmonton Mall.
You know what I will say? I went to the American equivalent, like the Mall of America in Minnesota.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was like, yeah, it's a good mall.
What makes a mall good, though, is my question. Like,
it's essentially an amusement park with
clothes
shopping.
When I went to the Mall of America, I went into like maybe three or four stores and bought something. And at every one, the clerk or the sales associate was like phenomenally helpful.
Yes.
As if it was like the big leagues of retail workers. It's like, you got to be the all-star to get there. Like, it, incredibly, incredibly helpful. So that was nice.
It's like working at Disneyland.
I don't know if that's the same thing at West Edmonton Mall.
We got Minor Matt coming in with, last time I went to West Edmonton Mall, I slept in the car in the parkade while my three friends went shopping. Best decision ever. So apparently the parkade is very great to sleep in as well. Continuing with our wrong answers only, how will Mike Smith get the confidence back for the Oilers fans in game two? This one, unsigned. Make a video apology for McDavid's house. They can't be mad at that view.
I was sitting over here trying. I was like, okay, it's Edmonton, so we're already in the ballpark for McDavid's house. Like, where am I going here? And that's better than anything I came up with. Shout out to Rager.
Torgi, wrong answers only. He needs a new name. It's too plain. Michael Smith.
Okay. So, like, can you imagine that? On the off day, he goes and gets his name changed.
Meta World Smith.
Make a save, Smith.
Make a save, Smith. Gus says, spearing someone to the groin seemed to work last series. Worth a try?
Hey. When in doubt.
Joe says, on our West Edmonton Mall conversation, best water slides and wave pool. Their amusement park is better than Playland. I hate pumping Edmonton's tires. Is the amusement park that large?
Better than Playland.
I had no idea.
I take that as a personal shot. I worked at Playland.
Alumni, right?
I worked there for 7 years as a ride attendant. I take that as a personal shot.
Which ride, by the way? Was it Coaster?
No, I worked on like Music Express, Hell's Gate, all of those ones. We called them majors back in it. There's track, which was roller coasters, and majors. All worked in majors.
Wow, the lingo. Just learning. Hey, fascinating. Man,
it never leaves you. It never leaves you, boys.
All right, we'll do some more wrong answers only as the show continues. We like to read all the texts that come in, or as many as we can, even if they're not really on topic. I love this one here, though. Let's speak about Rasmus Anderson. You guys do know that how Calgary acquired him, right? He was the second-round pick that we gave up for Sven Berchi. Imagine him being the top right-hand D-man playing with Quinn Hughes. Paul from Squamish. Yes, we're all very aware that Sven Berchi was the pick for Rasmus Anderson. It's been well established.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not too sure what we're supposed to speak about it, though.
Like, go back in time? We should have, like, a time machine Thursday. Like, if there's one move you could take back, Texter, you might be onto something. I don't know.
It'd be like watching Florida tonight. Be like, remember Gustav Forsling?
Yeah. If we're on that topic, we should definitely talk some Cam Neely.
Thanks for the text, though. I always appreciate your interaction. 650 into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. More on the way here. Home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.